There's a time and a place for a fillet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS, Eye on the World, Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor, David Livingston, my colleague and co-host and co-pilot, and we're headed 124 light years out, thanks to Niku Madhudasan, a professor of astrophysics and exoplanetary science, the Institute of Astronomy at the University of Cambridge. And I read from the press release at the end of 2023 for the accomplishment of the professor and his team. An international team of astronomers led by the University of Cambridge has used data from the James Webb Space Telescope to discover methane and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere of K2-18b, an exoplanet in the Goldilocks zone. This is the first time that carbon-based molecules have been discovered in the atmosphere of an exoplanet in the habitable zone. Professor, welcome. Congratulations. Some definitions first. The search for life includes looking for a planet Earth, something like the Garden of Eden, about Earth's size, rocky and wet in the habitable zone. However, as I understand it, people working with exoplanets are now expanding their search to see much larger planets, even planets that are more gas or as much gas as rock, still looking for life, however, changing the dimensions, the demand. Have I said all that correctly? And what takes you to a planet that I believe it's eight times or more the size of Earth and very gassy? Good evening to you, Niku.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, John, for having me on this. This is a fascinating time to be working in this area and for the search for life in general. So, at the outset, we have to realize that, yes, the ultimate goal in the search for life beyond the solar system is look for an Earth-like planet with life on it, right? So that's the ultimate goal. But we also have to realize the ground realities of what is possible observationally, what our telescopes are capable to do. If we do a quick analysis on what is our maximum capability right now, we'll very quickly realize that, first of all, we don't have an exact Earth analog around a sun-like star that we know of today that we could observe. And even if we did, we don't have the capability, the observational capability to detect the atmosphere of such a planet. So just from very practical considerations, we have to look into planets that are observable with current facilities. And that takes you to planets that are slightly bigger, stars that are slightly smaller than the sun, and so on. The physics and maths work out in such a way that the larger the planet you can have, the smaller the star you can have, while maintaining still habitability on the planet would be your best bet.
So what we have here is in this system, the star is a red dwarf. That is not what we have here in our solar system, but a red dwarf, because it's not as hot and not as big, has planets closer in that are in the habitable zone, and you found one.
Exactly.
And you found the atmosphere. So take us, how do you discern the atmosphere of something 124 light years away?
Yeah, so the planet itself was found already in 2015 by the Kepler Space Telescope. So we didn't discover the planet ourselves. That was already known, but it was known to be transiting its host star. In other words, you can infer the planet going in front of the star, like this transit of Venus, for example, in front of the sun. So you can see the dip in starlight when the planet is going in front of the star. And yes, the star is about half the radius of the star is about half the radius of the sun. And the planet is 2.5 times larger than the Earth in radius, which means that your planet to star contrast, the radius ratio squared, is significantly bigger for this system than it would be for an Earth-Sun system. So that is very favorable to detect its atmosphere. So just the contrast. So we used the James Webb Space Telescope last year to look at the atmosphere of this planet. And the way it's done is when the planet transits in front of its host star, some of the starlight passes through the atmosphere of the planet before reaching us, the observer, or in other words, the telescope. And based on the relative absorption in of that starlight in the planet's atmosphere, we are able to work out what the molecules in the planet atmosphere could be doing that absorption of the starlight.
Ah.
So that's the spectroscopy that we are talking about. And what we found when we did that was that the atmosphere has significant amounts of methane and carbon dioxide in it. And the background atmosphere is a hydrogen-rich atmosphere as opposed to a nitrogen-rich atmosphere as on Earth. So the hydrogen, H2, molecular hydrogen is the dominant gas, but there are substantial amounts of methane and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Now, that's a big deal from many points of view. I'll just irrespective of whether the planet is habitable or not, right? So if you put that question aside, the very fact that we're even able to detect a molecule like methane or carbon dioxide in such a small planet that is just 2.5 times larger radius than the Earth at a distance of 124 light years, that itself is a major breakthrough. Right. So we have to realize that methane had never been discovered in an exoplanet that small ever before. And especially for a planet that cold, it's the equilibrium temperature of that planet is about 300 Kelvin. So it's only slightly warmer than the Earth. So we had for the longest time looking for methane in cool planets, exoplanets, but never found it. So it was called the missing methane problem. And the first time we observed this planet with the James Webb Space Telescope, in 14 hours of observation, we detect two molecules, two carbon-based molecules at once in a habitable zone planet. It's a major observational leap for the field. So to us, those are some of the things that really mark the major influence JWST is having on exoplanetary science.
David, you have a question for the professor.
Yes, Nico, nice to meet you. In the article, they talk about detecting dimethyl sulfide, which is a sign of life. Is this a biosignature that we have been reading about, that the exoplanets we need to be able to detect on them, or is this not considered a biosignature?
So that's a very good question, David. Thank you. So that particular molecule is on Earth. It is a very robust biosignature. So for example, if you have an Earth-like planet and you found DMS on it, so that would be considered as a very robust sign, because on Earth, it is known to be predominantly produced by life basically by life. So previously, before the observations for several years, for more than a decade, various studies had predicted that molecule, DMS, to be a robust biosignatures in exoplanets, both Earth-like and larger exoplanets, like K2, including planets like K28 and B with H2-rich atmospheres. People had predicted that you should see, if you see such a molecule, that would be a strong indicator of life. And that is why it is so interesting. I must clarify at this point that we did not detect that molecule robustly. There is only a tentative indication of its presence. So in scientific parlance, we wouldn't call that a robust detection. We would just call that as a tentative hint, which is why we are getting more observations to look at the planet, the atmosphere again, and see if we can tease out the signal better, to see if we can detect it at higher significance. And if we do, that would be like a major development in this area. It would be a strong biomarker, although we have to be careful because it's an environment very different from Earth. We have to be open to abiotic mechanisms as well.
As I understand, Professor, there are rocky and wet planets. That would be Earth and the inner planets of our solar system. And then there are gas giants such as Neptune and Uranus. This planet is something you've called Hycean. In other words, a hydrogen background with a possible ocean. So it's both rocky and also gaseous. Is that this? It's a combination.
So it's intermediate. So it could have a rocky core, but the idea is that it would have a substantial amount of its interior would be in water, mostly in water ice, but also water oceans. So the word Haitian, as you rightly pointed out, it's a portmanteau of hydrogen and ocean. So hydrogen-rich atmosphere and ocean-covered surface. So there won't be any, if the theory is right, there won't be any rock formations that you would see on such a planet. It would be very deep oceans covering the entire planet and a hydrogen-rich atmosphere. And these sorts of planets, if they exist, fall in between the ice giants in the solar system, the Neptune and Uranus, and the rocky planets. It would have a thin hydrogen-rich atmosphere by comparison to what we have in our giant planets in the solar system, but it would still be a hydrogen-rich atmosphere on an ocean world.
Ocean as in liquid water?
Exactly.
Well, that's very suggestive. David?
The star K2 has two planets around it. Is the second planet a sister planet to 18b, or is it radically different?
So we don't know the properties of the second planet very well. We don't know its size very well, for example. So we don't know if that would be, if at all, qualified to be a Haitian or anything. But K2-18b is very well characterized.
About methane, Professor. When we were first looking over Mars, the early probes, there was much attention to methane because the origin of methane has two possibilities. One is biological. Another is a process, a seismic process or a volcano. Is that the same that the methane you're looking at? It has an origin, but it could be the planet itself and not life.
Exactly. So that's exactly right. So methane, in many circumstances, astrobiologically, methane is a very relevant species. People would associate with some biological process, but on these kinds of planets, there could also be an abiotic process, a planetary process that could give it. So we can't claim it to be biological. You're right.
And the carbon-based molecule, the attention for your discovery is that you found a carbon-based molecule in conjunction with methane. Is that even more suggestive?
Yeah. So the one of the important findings from our observations was that we found a lot of methane, a lot of CO2, but we did not find ammonia. So even before the observations were made, studies had predicted that if you see that combination, finding methane, CO2, and not finding ammonia or carbon monoxide, is strongly indicative of an ocean, because ammonia would be soluble in the ocean. So you wouldn't see it in the atmosphere, whereas the other two molecules you could still see. So that combination is what was predicted to be suggestive of an ocean. So when we saw that, that is what we used to infer that this could indeed be a Haitian world as we had predicted previously.
David? Go ahead, Professor.
No, I was just saying, now on top of it, if we actually confirm dimethyl sulfide, that would be a major indicator, along with all the other molecules that we are constraining, of potential for life on the planet.
David, you have a question.
So if there's ammonia, that excludes the possibility of life. Is that a correct understanding?
So that is that. Yeah, that is one hypothesis, is that on these sorts of planets, the hydrogen-rich atmospheres, if you have a deep hydrogen-rich atmosphere, then most of that carbon would be in methane. Most of the nitrogen is expected to be in ammonia. But if you have a thin hydrogen-rich atmosphere and an ocean underneath, the ocean kind of absorbs the ammonia and you're left with methane mostly and carbon dioxide. So that's the idea.
Is there a planet like this in our solar system? Are Neptune and Uranus qualified to be Haitian?
No, they won't, because their atmospheres would be too thick to allow for the right temperature and pressure at the ocean surface.
So you have found something that we don't have an example of in our solar system.
Exactly. So that is the challenge here. I mean, that is why this is so interesting. You might be interested to know that the majority of planets that we have discovered to date, the large portion of it, of that population, falls in between Earth and Neptune in size. Neptune is, and Uranus are about four times Earth radius. But most of these planets fall in between that range. They're called sub-Neptunes, to which we have no analogs in the solar system, which motivates all these new theories to predict what they could be like and observations that could constrain those theories.
Professor Niku Marisoudan is a professor of astrophysics at Exoplanetary Science at the Institute of Astronomy, University of Cambridge. David Livingston, Dr. Space. And when we come back, we're going to ask the professor to take an unlimited budget and tell us what he wants to do next, exploring these Hycean worlds. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.